Weeds shake and shrivel at the thought of expert lawn and garden advice. Here at Rosie on the House, scare your lawn straight by dialing 1-888-ROSIE-4U.
And we start this segment in Sun City with Paul at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U to get in line to talk to Jay Harper of Harper's Nursery. Good morning, Paul. What you working on?
Hey, Paul. Romy, I called last week about a lemon tree that the lemons are from my neighbors, actually. And his lemons are really big, but inside last year they all dried up. And I got a call back yesterday, and I just was returning the call.
Well, you know, there could be a number of reasons for that. And are these, how big are these lemons? Like grapefruit big?
Maybe a little bit bigger than grapefruit.
Okay. I'm guessing it's a ponderosa lemon as opposed to our normal Lisbon or maybe Eureka lemons. And ponderosas just historically are drier on the inside. They're not the greatest for juicing. They're fun to have because they get these great big – I've got one in my yard, great big jumbo. Yeah, bigger than even grapefruit, size fruit. But they're just not – that's just pretty characteristic. And in my experience with ponderosa lemons, they just are not very juicy. They're pretty dry. And so that's my guess is what you have, and there's not anything really much you can do about it.
Especially when it's on your neighbor's property.
Well, yeah. You need to go find a different neighbor that's got a better lemon tree.
Let's bring Richard in the conversation. And Tucson wants to talk about wildflowers. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, I've got a non-growing related question, or at least non-gardening. With the rain we've gotten here this winter, and I presume it's going to keep going on, I'm looking at the idea that we're going to have a heck of a good spring with wildflowers. And I want to invite my son and daughter-in-law down from Grand Junction, Colorado, to be able to see it. And I kind of need to have an idea of what time of the year this might all take place.
Well. I think he needs a collection of Arizona Highways magazines to go through their archives. Usually the March, April.
I would say end of March.
We had a wet winter last winter, but the heat hit us so quick that the wildflower season was like 3 days long. There was a drive I had to take from Tucson, of course, through Picacho, and it was so beautiful that day. I got off 10 and took a side road home, and it was just absolutely beautiful. But I mean, I had to do the same trip like 3 days later, and they were gone.
It didn't last long.
So yeah. That's the trick.
That's why I think probably late March rather than into April is the safest bet. Usually, you know, even if we get warmer than normal, they're not going to, you know, burn up by then. You know, a lot of times that first week or two of April is kind of the peak, I would guess. And it depends on the elevation. You know, that's a beautiful thing about Arizona.
We ought to find out from Richard how much of the state he knows and where. Give him a couple trails that he could drive.
Well, of course, the old way to Tucson, the old
Florence
way through Florence or through Oracle and out that way back towards Florence Junction. That's pretty good in some years. Picacho is Picky Peak is well known for the poppies and
Apache Trail,
and then
can get beautiful.
If you came up from Tucson, the Oracle to Florence Junction, and then made your way to Apache Junction, and then take the Apache Trail up to Canyon and Roosevelt Lake, and you could hook around through Globe and then come back down through Winkleman and back to Tucson. It'd be take you all day to do that, but that'd be beautiful, I bet.
How's that sound, Richard?
Oh, that sounds great.
Do you know this?
I'll just get the kids to drop their RV up at Picacho, have them tow down their motorcycle. My wife and I'll join them on ours, and we'll go from there.
That sounds like a trip.
There you go.
You know, not nearly as a populated of an area, and not a lot of accommodations, but that Casa Grande to Gila Bend is another long, quiet stretch, especially if you're on a motorcycle. You don't have to worry about traffic or a lot of mountain curves if you wanted to just kick back and relax. But there's four or five spots, rest areas, that are on saddles as you go through mountain passes. When I drive to Tucson to avoid traffic, that's the route I take it, 85 down to 8. And everyone that takes that route is going to San Diego. So they're all going west, and I'm coming east into Casa Grande. There's never anybody on that road, and it's
instead of going coming up that way, go on to Ajo and down that way.
So couple great ideas, but pack your lunch. there's a few places in Gila Bend, but if you're looking
for the Space Age Motel, man.
There you go.
If you're looking for like a river bottom bar and grill like they've got out in Florence, you're not going to find one along that stretch. Let's see. Next on the line is, I believe this is Ted. Good morning, Ted. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm a neighborhood volunteer. I called a couple years ago about a problem we had on our street with an Aleppo pine that died. It got that disease. It was a 65-foot tall tree that was leaning at an angle over the road, and a neighbor and I, we called the city preservation department about it. It died, and the woman that lives there is a widow, and she said she couldn't afford to have it cut down. So the city has a program where they look for volunteer tree crews, and it took 2.5 years, but the tree was finally cut down. And there's an elementary school on the street, and that's why we were concerned, because the school buses drive under it. And I thought that because it was leaning at an angle over the road, the city would assume it as their responsibility, but these are hard times as far as the city budget goes.
And do you have a question?
Yeah, well, last week your guest, Mr. Eisenhower, said that the Aleppo pines in Italy and Greece, they grow because they get winter rains, but I don't see what that has to do with a tree living, the Aleppo pines in Phoenix, because I know that stores like Home Depot don't even sell pine trees anymore because we've gotten worse and worse droughts. Thank you.
All right, thank
you, Ted.
I guess
that was a political statement.
I guess so. Let's see if we can help Kelly. If I'm reading this right, in Benson, Arizona?
Al.
Okay, Al.
My question just is about a ponderosa pine that I have that, you know, we have several on our property that have been established. We've been there 15 years, and I don't know when they were planted, but they were quite mature when we bought the property. But there's one that the top third of the tree seems to be dead, and I was just wondering if there's anything you can do to try to save a tree like that, or if you should cut that dead top off, or what you should do. Thank you.
Well, any tree like a ponderosa or a, you know, Elderica pine that has a, you know, that has a top terminal like that, when you top it, you're going to change the, of course it's dead, so you don't have much choice. I mean, I don't think you want to leave a dead any dead limbs on a tree. That being said, you know, go ahead and take out any of the dead wood. Should always be pruned out. You're gonna have an ugly eyesore kind of a thing, plus it's you know, just affecting the way the tree looks, and it isn't going to benefit or hurt the tree to leave it there, but you might as well cut it out. Then you have to decide, is the tree aesthetically pleasing? Is it doing what you want it to do in the landscape anyway? So that's a tough question to completely answer, but cutting the deadwood out of the tree is just going to make it look a little better at least. Now, having a flat-topped pine tree after that may or may not be the right choice for your landscape, and the tree may continue to die back depending on what's caused, you know, it to die in the first place.
And I'm looking it up. I'm waiting for the computer. It's usually a little faster than this. But what is Benson's elevation? Seems like you don't see ponderosas until
3,500 feet, I would guess, you know, 3,500. Yeah. Probably pretty low for if he truly has a ponderosa pine. You don't normally start seeing ponderosa pines till at least about 5,000
above
feet.
Rye, you know, so you're getting into Payson, and Payson's a mile
Payson
high.
Payson just barely has ponderosas. So
you get on the rim, and you're up at 6,000-7,000 feet.
Yeah,
that seems like a maybe not the best pine tree for his area.
Well, and he may, in fact, not have a ponderosa. It could be another type of pine. I don't know. But yeah,
stick your nose in the bark. See if it smells
like vanilla.
If
it's a ponderosa pine, yeah, trying to grow that at that elevation is probably the number one cause for that dieback, would be my guess.
And ponderosa is one of the easier pines, even for a novice like me, to identify as a ponderosa. It's hard to mistake a ponderosa for something else.
Well, except that maybe at a real young age, you know, before they've developed that
true
orangey bark and, you know, the old timers call them pumpkins, you know, those big old orange trunk mature ponderosas are pretty darn easy to tell. And they have that vanilla smell to the bark.
Three shoots to every needle cluster.
Right. So if you take a...
Was that technical enough?
Follicle.
Did you get that?
Yeah. three needles attached in one spot would also identify them, yeah.
We did a lot of our camping growing up in the lower desert area, but Camp Geronimo is surrounded by pine. I can't get into Pine Forest and not think about Camp Geronimo.
There you go.
That's just, absolutely.
That's beautiful spot.
That opens the line for you at 1-888-767-4348. And I'd like to just encourage people. We've been trying to challenge people to cut back your water 10% consumption this year. Is your irrigation system on?
No, sir, but
mine's
been
off for 3 weeks.
I've had a neighbor that as I pulled out of my cul-de-sac this morning, their lawn was getting watered. It took everything in me not to go over and knock at their door.
And I tell you what, I figured out how I'm going to remember my system is off. I've put some two-way Velcro tape on the cover of the irrigation box.
Okay.
And I've got a green tag that I Velcro there and a red tag that I Velcro there. And the other one stays inside the closet.
Is your irrigation box in a place that you see frequently?
Yeah, at my house it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'd be the challenge for a lot of, like mine.
It's tucked away.
It's way over by the electrical service and panel.
Unless you're going over there to turn it on or off.
That's the only reason to go over there. Or we've tripped a breaker in the house or something. But yeah.
I other than my lawn, I stopped putting the timer off for all of my different trees. I've got a citrus valve, a valve for my pecans, a valve for my stone fruits, just because occasionally electronics fail, systems fail. I like to know that it's actually physically going on. So I do it all manually now, and I think that has definitely saved.
I do mine manually in the wintertime. I have a very old controller. It only has a 7-day cycle, and I haven't switched it because I know how to use it. So in the wintertime, obviously trees and shrubs and big mature plantings don't even need it every 7 days, even if it's dry. So I manually cycle my tree and shrub valves through the clock. I just turn it on manually, but so I don't have an on day. I leave the duration the same. They still get the same amount of water when I do water them, but I just do it manually. And I just have a couple of plants in my landscape that I look at. I call them indicator plants. And when they look like they're finally starting to wilt a little bit, that's when everything else gets watered. It's been well over a month since I've watered those things.